best sales leadership, in my opinion, is situational guidance. You know, the sales rep said, I just had this happen. I can't seem to get past this, or this customer that I really wanted to do business with just said this to me, or I'm having this problem inside the company. And so when they know they have an ear and that they have somebody that's going to share insights and cares about them, it takes their plight seriously, sales reps sell more.
What's up, everyone? It's Eric Vessels with Tactiful. Welcome back to another episode of Tactiful Tuesdays. Today, we're welcoming someone whose name is basically synonymous with high-impact sales and standout client relationships in the print industry, Bill Gillespie. Bill brings over 40 years of experience to the table, and these days, he's channeling all that wisdom into his work as an independent business and sales consultant. Over the years, he's helped organizations build stronger client relationships, write smarter proposals, close more business, all without losing the human touch that's made him a trusted voice in the industry. He's not just about numbers and strategies, although to be fair, pretty great at both of those. Bill's built a career on listening first, asking better questions, and helping teams turn potential into performance. He's done it with an unmistakable blend of empathy, insight, and no-nonsense honesty, quite a bit of humor. Bill is also a part of the tactical team here at Tactiful, helping us with sales as a part of our bootcamp workshops that we do with printers. Let's get into his story and take on where the industry's headed and maybe a few things he's learned outside the boardroom too. Bill, welcome to the show.
Oh man, I am so happy to be here. I'm excited.
How's that for you? These introductions are getting pretty not too bad, I have to say. Maybe a little bit long. I see people kind of like, okay, when do I get to talk? But you know, so you've spent decades helping print businesses grow and evolve. What first pulled you into this world and what keeps you inspired today?
Well, you know, I was actually a print buyer. And I ran a little in-house print shop, and a paper salesman of all sources said to me, he says, you know, Bill, I think you would be a pretty good print sales guy. And so I said, you know, I think about it from time to time. I admired a guy that sold printing to me. I thought, gosh, he's living the life I want to live. You know, I really liked the way our office reacted when he came in, and he always seemed like he was having fun. And so anyway, I let the paper guy introduce me to somebody, and the next thing I know, I was working and selling printing, and I have to confess, I had learned from the best. Some of the people that sold to me were really good at it, and so anyway, it just happened to be something I had a knack for and have loved, and I still love it. I still love the business.
You can tell. You can tell, and I will also say, and I think I commented on a piece that you wrote on LinkedIn, you're a fantastic storyteller, and I think one thing that I've learned in my career as a salesperson is you have to be a really good storyteller. Not in a, like, you know, the fish and tales my grandpa used to tell me, you know, the big lie, but you have to have the ability to speak with almost like a creative voice, right? Get that excitement going and kind of get people pulled in with your words. And you do a really good job of that. Some of your posts on LinkedIn, I just read them and I just sit there and I just think and like, damn, that's really freaking insightful. So if you don't follow Bill on LinkedIn already, please do, because he posts some really, really good and engaging stuff. But now that you're independently consulting, what kinds of businesses are you working with, and what problems are they bringing to your door? Are there common themes?
There are. Anybody with a sales staff wants to know how to, if they are enjoying good business, they want to know how to sustain it and protect it from the environment. And if they have a sales staff and they're not happy with their volume, they want to know how to change that. Do I need more reps, or how do I help my reps sell more stuff? Or how do I get the reps excited where they sell at a higher price point? No matter what business they're in, whether it's software or machine sales or print sales or credential sales or whatever it might be, the questions or the goals are very similar. And anyway, salespeople, they ask for dates for a living. If you think about what they do, they're actually out there in the marketplace, yeah. You know, and they're deal with a lot of rejection. And then if they're having a tough time with a transaction or with a prospect or whatever, chances are they've got a supervisor that's leaning on them too, you know. So it's a career that can be lonely. I provide some solace there. I spend some time with the reps, and we talk about what's going on in their life. And I will say this, the best sales leadership, I experienced this because I had a good sales leader, but I've tried to be one too. The best sales leadership, in my opinion, is situational guidance. You know, the sales rep said, I just had this happen. I can't seem to get past this, or this customer that I really wanted to do business with just said this to me, or I'm having this problem inside the company. And so when they know they have an ear and that they have somebody that's going to share insights and cares about them, it takes their plight seriously, sales reps sell more. They're more successful in that environment, if that makes sense.
Oh, it makes perfect sense. And I think it goes broader to just leadership, right? If there's perceived empathy, I think it's a lot easier to listen to someone and work for someone if they're versus just, you know, just cracking a whip and worrying about, you know, getting production. Because as you said, like, it's almost like it's kind of good leadership, good sales management, I think is so personal. And you also have to take into account, hey, so-and-so had a shitty day. Oh, well, what's going on? Right. And be that ear of like, well, my, you know, whatever happened, you know, my dog died, or my wife's in ill health, or everybody's got something right going on. The more you can express that empathy around that and listen and be an ear, the more successful I think someone can be. And I know that's, I could tell just from I've known you for a long time, just from being in the industry, you know, been in graphics and all that, but in the short time that we've worked together, I know that that's something high on your value list. But sales has changed. It's not really what it's used to be. And what do you think has changed the most from your early days to now? And how has it affected our industry?
Well, you know, selling certainly has changed. I will say this, my perspective or my opinion on it is the tools have changed more than the art of selling, though. And so,
yeah, there's fundamentals, right, that don't change.
Yeah, there's no question that when I started selling printing in 1978. And so that's a long, long time ago. A lot of people selling now that weren't even born then, you know. So it was a very...
I won't make you feel bad and tell you how old I was in 78. It's fine.
Well, but, you know, I'm a very social guy. So the times that I, you know, when I started in the business and selling through the 80s and 90s, and, you know, I sold until the day I walked out of Bennett Graphics, you know, 5 years ago or whatever that was, you know, but it lent itself to my style. You know, it was one-on-one, it was face-to-face. I say one-on-one, I did lots of group presentations too, but your manner and your empathy and your personality could have a lot of impact on how successful your sales were. And I had a mentor tell me very early in my career that, and I preach this now and claim his words like they were mine, that people don't buy when they understand your pitch. Buy when you understand what they're trying to consume. Customers buy when they feel understood, not when they understand the sales rep. Mm-hmm. But sticking with my premise that sales is the same, but the tools have changed, you have the reps today have a lot of resources available to them. We didn't have LinkedIn.
Oh, man.
I started selling.
Yeah, the research tools are like bonkers based on what we've had.
You got out the phone book and looked up advertising agencies. You got out the phone book and looked up breweries. You know, you did whatever you did just to identify prospects. Well, you have unbelievable resources that let you identify targets now. But let me tell you what else you have. We didn't have cell phones. And you can take a video of yourself making a pitch. You can take a video of a project you're proud of. You can do a video tour of your facility focusing on problems you solve, and you can fire that off to a prospect that you've met. Say, hey, we haven't met each other yet, but I sure would like to have a few minutes of your time. Let me show you a little bit about who I am and a little bit about how we solve problems for customers. Well, we didn't have tools like that in 1978.
No. You had to wait. You hopefully had a marketing company that was creating some kind of content and you had to wait for them to get it to you. But most of it was brochures and that was about it. But you speak also about the importance of asking better questions when it comes to working with clients. Can you unpack that idea a little bit for us?
Well, sure. So, and I totally get how this happens, but print reps, and I was guilty of it in the beginning too. You think when you get an opportunity to bid a project, that you're selling, that you're making sales, and you are of a fashion. You are definitely when you submit a price, you're attempting to sell something. All you can do, if that's where you stop, all you can do is submit a bid. That's really all you can do, and you can hope that your service and that they like you and that your quality is good enough and that your price won't cost you the business. That's what you're hoping for. But somewhere in the equation, the customer has already done the hard stuff. That's how they got to a set of specs. Somebody up the ladder has said, "We want this thing to happen. We think this thing can happen if we print something." And our idea is to make it be a direct mail piece, or our idea is for it to be a handout for ourselves, that whatever the business problem is they're trying to solve. In my career, and it took a little while for me to figure it out, but in my career, when I started getting involved in those questions, when I would take the specs that came to me, but I would ask the person, "Explain to me what you're doing. Explain to me what you're trying to accomplish. And these specs sound cool. How did you arrive at this?" Well, the customers loved talking about that decision process. They loved
Of
sharing
course.
that information, and I kind of got elevated to partner status, if that makes sense, because I was validating their process. And the next thing you know, they're saying, "Hey, we've got this thing in mind. What would you do? How would you solve this problem? What do you
Grin.
see other people doing?" And I'm like, "Well, hey, you might be interested in what I saw Brand X do to solve a similar problem." And it changed my sales talk early in my career.
No, absolutely. And I think and what one thing that I've learned in my much more limited sales role in my career is my ratio to listening to talking, when that shifted to way more listening, it was dramatic, right? Because I think the human nature is just like, I have this thing I want to sell to you. Here, let me talk all about it. And what I hear you saying is, no. You've got this thing. But the way that you want to sell it is not that you just have this thing and you want them to pay for it. You want to listen to them and then plug in what you have to solve that problem that they have, right? And
That's exactly right.
everybody universally likes to talk about themselves and their company and what they're doing or whatever. And it endears you to them the more that you're listening, right? And then if you're listening and doing what you say, which is, "Oh, hey, have you thought about this? Have you thought about that?" and become that trusted advisor. It was told to me a long time ago that what I was doing was consultative sales techniques, right? And I didn't really know. I was like, okay, I guess that's what I'm doing. But I was just applying my personality to trying to, sell ads on what they think or whatever. But yeah, and you've also in your consulting work, oh no, I'm getting lost in my questions here. Please bear with me. In your consulting work, what's one mistake you see sales teams make over and over? What's the most common mistake that people make?
I really think we touched on it in the last question, that they think the price doesn't matter nearly as much as the sales rep thinks it does. The sales reps, and this is not universal, there are standouts in every organization, but as a species, we're so excited when we get that inquiry that we've got a chance to submit a price and we think a sale's about to happen, that we don't think upstream. And so that's always the number one thing. I'll give you a perfect example. Years ago, a sales lady and I made a sales call on an international entertainment brand. We went up into Massachusetts and we saw this particular office of this place, and we had a PowerPoint presentation. We had samples on the table, and we're presenting to maybe 8 or 9 people, and they are all going sound asleep. They can just see they're dozing off at the table. There isn't anything we're saying that they haven't heard before. We're talking about what a cool piece we did here and what a cool piece we did there. And there was a guy over in the corner, and we'd installed a laser die cutter. And there was a guy over in the corner, and he was pulling these zippers that we'd made. We'd made these zipper sheets to show different kinds of closures for envelopes, if you will, out of this laser die cutter that we had. And I said, "God, aren't those things have it for me?" And the meeting stopped. He says, "I can't quit pulling them. I can't quit pulling them." And I said, "Well, let me show you a really cool way that a client used that. And we had done a piece for a baseball team, and they had made an envelope that looked like a baseball, and the zipper, the closure, was the stitches of the baseball.
The stitching.
And so
that's awesome.
He said, oh, that's awesome. So anyway, the meeting turned on a dime, and we went through the same presentation, but we talked about what the customer was trying to accomplish versus our cool technology. We said, this is the way the customer came to us with this inquiry. And what I'm reinforcing there is the story about how you solved a problem is a lot more valuable than the sample you're showing or the technology
yeah.
that you've got. You know, those
and look for that opportunity.
They don't matter to the customer.
Well, I think what one of the things I'm picking up on that is like you looked for an opportunity to connect. Right. Like you weren't connecting, like you were talking, they were trying to listen. They weren't really listening, but there wasn't any connection. And a lot of times you could be presenting and connect, like that's a thing. Right. But if you're not, where can I now connect? Right. And you found it. It's like, hey, aren't those cool? You know, let's talk about that. And then that gets you kind of on track. I want to talk.
When I train sales teams and we're talking about group presentations, I'll go to a dry erase board. I'll put the CEO and the CFO and the brand manager and the production manager and the graphic designer. I'll put all these names on the board and I'll say, what do each of these people want out of what they're about to buy? Well, they all want something different. You know, the production manager wants a good price. The graphic designer wants his design to look good. The creative director wants it to move the needle. The brand manager wants to sell more stuff. The CFO wants a lower cost of ownership. And the CEO wants the stockholders happy. And so if your presentations have something for everybody, if you're talking about what matters to them, they're going to hear you. If you're talking about what matters to you, we print this fast. I've got a buddy who talks about how fast he prints all the time. And I'll say, well, that sounds fast. Is that fast? It sounds really fast, but it doesn't mean anything to a customer.
Right. Well, that's the old speeds and feeds thing, right? Like,
that's right.
At some point, you know, you've got to, and I know we talk about this a lot in our digital embellishment bootcamp, selling value, right? Not, you know, and how you sell value. But you, like you said, you have to ask the right questions because maybe you make the assumption that the CEO cares about X, but if you don't ask, it may be something completely different. Maybe the CEO doesn't really care about stock or whatever. Maybe the CEO cares about value or cost or whatever, right? But if you don't ask, you can't know. So I think that's your conversational lessons really are ringing true to me. But I want to talk a little bit as we wind up here about education. You spent some time teaching sales at Clemson. What do you love about stepping into that educator role at this stage of your career?
It definitely winds my watch, Eric. I mean, the opportunity to be a mentor, to influence a young mind, and by that I don't mean manipulated, I mean reinforce to them that anything is possible, is just extremely exciting to me and validating to me. I did not seek that opportunity at Clemson. Somebody that was actually teaching that class before me was retiring. And he came to me at an event and said, hey, would you consider doing this? And it happened that I had a second home that was very near the Clemson campus. And so it worked out for me. And so I did that. I guess I did it a couple of years. And you know, we would have 18, 20 kids in a class. And you know, we would, when they would walk in the first day, I assigned each of them a printing company that they had to represent. I said, for the rest of this class, you work for that printer. And so as we talked about every sales lesson or agenda, if you will, I wanted them to have researched the company they were assigned and think about it the way they thought that company might think about it. And it was a great lesson for them. You know, the whole semester, every assignment, they had to see it through the eyes of the company they were assigned to represent. And so
nice.
It was just a lot of fun working with those kids. And a lot of them didn't care anything about going into sales, but they understood that knowing how to sell could make them more effective in business, negotiating their own career even, you know. So it was a great experience for me. And I'm still in touch with some of those kids. Some of them work for companies that I used to be a part of, and I'm excited about that. And anyway, I don't know if I've answered your question, but I...
No, you absolutely answered it. You absolutely answered it. And I think what I've learned, because I'm kind of entering my phase of my career where I can start. I've mentored a couple of, well, I've mentored one student from Cal Poly and hope to do more of it, but I'm learning that you learn so much when you're teaching. Like, and it's one of the most rewarding things ever. And I'm sure that you've experienced that, right? Because there's new perspectives and stuff that you may not have thought about. And it kind of shakes you out of your whatever 20, 30 year way you learned it because you're listening.
You're right. You want to get better at what you do. Teach it to somebody. Because when you do, as you, to use your phrase, you're going to unpack the process and you're going to improve what you're already doing.
Yeah, because the best teachers are learners also, right? Like that, like it's a two-way street, and if it's ever a one-way street, you're not teaching that well. That's just my opinion. All right, let's lighten it up a bit. When you're not working, where do you find joy or inspiration? You have any current obsessions or hobbies or things that you like?
I am a diehard snow skier, and so as you may
so
may,
like okay, wait, let's dial this in correctly. Like cross country or downhill or all of it or. Downhill. Let's go.
I'm 72 years old and I'll ski 25, 30 days a year. And my physician.
It's amazing.
He just cautions me about it every year. He's like, Bill, you're just not going to repair things like you once did. You know, be careful.
Oh my boy, howdy.
But I absolutely love it. Both of my kids ski. They live in Utah and we keep a little place out there so that I can visit with them and also have access to the slopes. And so I'm a very avid snow skier. I'm a beginning fly fisherman and a friend of my daughter's actually took me fly fishing. I've only been a few times, but he actually took me fly fishing this past winter. And I could tell you it's cold to fly fish in the winter. But anyway, we were
part of fly fishing is like in the stream, right? Like you're not on the bank.
And this guy was terrifically patient with me. And there's snow piled everywhere and the part of the stream is frozen. We're still wading through it in our chest waders and fishing and caught fish. So those are a couple of things that I really, really enjoy.
Oh man, that's so awesome.
I like golf, but I'm a horrible golfer, you know, but those are things I enjoy.
Well, I mean, most people that talk about golf, I don't think they like it because they're good at it. It's the process of getting out there and being in nature. But I'm going to have to file in my memory bank, get on a ski trip with you. I think that would be, I don't know. I would love to learn how to do it better. I've been maybe once, twice back in the day. Last question. We'll end with this. If someone wrote a book about your career, what would you want the title to be?
A man. He didn't know what he thought he knew.
He didn't know what he thought he knew. I like it. I like it. Bill Gillespie, he didn't know what he thought he knew.
Yeah.
But I think he's willing to learn. Bill, thanks so much, my man. Appreciate all the work that you do with us on the boot camps and what you're doing and continue to do by elevating sales and sales management in the industry or just strategy overall. Appreciate your friendship and working with us. And thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me on. I've loved doing it. And I love our industry. We represent some great stuff.
Excellent. Take it easy, man.
I think something that I'm very proud of is that we have made adjustments and changes as the years have gone on and the industry's changed in several ways. I mean, it starts with our name, which a lot of people may not know, is that we, and you probably don't know, we were the Foil Stamping and Embossing Association. That's what we were for several years.
Oh, because, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so that's really what we concentrated on.